Sir Isaac Newton would be proven wrong. What happens? Spontaneous failure of the third law of motion. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Bex.
So, we haven't said hey, Patrick and Bex through these microphones in a long time.
Yep. I mean, I've moved since. Had to dig up the microphone again for this.
I had to find the cable. It was kind of embarrassing because I thought it was a different cable. So, why are we here? I think that I would summarize that we're here because we've missed doing this. The two people and a dog who listened to all of our podcasts religiously had worn out the bits on their hard drive replaying the old ones. And in this case, today we're going to talk about keys and security concepts and Apple's recent announcements and the general movement towards pass keys. I think made it an interesting topic for us.
I totally agree with that.
Just to kind of set the stage a little further for anybody who's made it this far into the podcast, this is actually going to be very focused, and it may even be short. We don't know yet, but it's not going to have, I'll say, the full table setting that we had gotten, or not table setting, full organizational structure we had gotten to the last time we recorded with the three of us. And Adam is still here. He is not boycotting. He just didn't particularly want to participate in this conversation, so we're going to try it as a pair. So, Apple announced a couple things that I think is what sparked our interest here. One of those was that they announced iCloud keychain sharing, and that kind of gets into the area of password managers. I happen to use 1Password. I think you use the same.
Yep, I've been using them for years as well.
Yeah, I love it. Like, it has been useful, and I've been using the sharing function of this. I use it two ways. Candidly, I have access to all of my mother's passwords because my mother is getting to a point in her life where she sometimes calls me and goes, hey, I can't do X, or can you help me walk through Y? And not having her password extended that process by quite a period of time while we tried to determine where said password was. And then the other is that I share passwords with my partner when we have accounts that, for all intents and purposes, are shared accounts, but which the company doesn't seem to understand should have multiple logins because they just didn't implement that. What about you?
Right. Yeah, so for me, I've been using it for my personal passwords, obviously, and we have one family, like we have a 1Password family account, and we share some passwords with there that are of the second type, where it's a, yeah, multiple people should have this password, but because the service doesn't implement a multiple passwords for the same account. It's been actually kind of funny for me, because, to be open, while I use the password sharing between me, my sister, and my parents, my wife does not actually use 1Password, and we'll get to why later. So that's also one reason the Apple thing is nice, because it would make that way easier, I think.
I hadn't thought about that. Now that you said that, I have definitely been challenged by my partner's choice to not occasionally save things in 1Password. And she and I have had to go spelunking through various other places at times to help her recover a password that she had.
She's only using Apple devices. And when we were going through the setup wizard for 1Password, they make it relatively easy, but it's still more complicated than the built-in password manager from Apple. And since the only devices she uses for personal things are all Apple devices, I was just like, you know what? When you try to, change a password or create an account, it prompts you for a, do you just want to use this strong password? Just select that. So just use that and never think about it again. and that is the built-in password manager from Apple. So that is literally the reason that she's using that, just because it is very simple if you're fully in the Apple ecosystem.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think if we could all go back in time, like, that might have been a choice that we would have made in my house too. We've mostly gotten down the 1-password road. I've had a password manager. I don't think that's controversial.
I would say it's controversial when you don't have one.
Right. And to be real clear to people, we're not talking about like Netflix here. Like, in my case, a good example of a shared password is the grocery delivery company. It happens to be Rolik.cz is the one we use here. And it's like, we're not going to have multiple of these accounts. This is silly. We need the history. We have some status and other stuff that accrues. We want one account for our house. Yep. This isn't a comment on, the larger issue around password sharing. But is it... I've always struggled with this idea of, is it a good idea to share part or all of my password set with someone through a password manager? Like, is that even a good plan? What's your opinion? You tend to be a little more security-minded than I am.
So my personal intent or preference is to always share it through, like, a password manager. And then specifically the sharing features in said password manager. The reason being that otherwise you'll end up just copying the password out to a messaging app or other approaches to get, like, typing them over. And the problem with most of those is that, well, first of all, if I have to change the password, which for some services, like, they make you change it every 3 months, and prior, I then had to give that password again to everyone because it has changed now, and I couldn't set it back to the same one, which obviously would also be a terrible idea. And then if you just share the passwords via messages, for example, or WhatsApp or whatever you use, then you're gonna have to trust them for safekeeping it. And also it is then just in plain text, if someone shares their phone with someone, for example, to show something off. Overall, I think that using sharing features of password managers for this specifically is the best approach if you do have to share passwords.
Okay, that makes sense. So I think the elephant in the room in all of this is passkeys. And so I'll start with an analogy and then you correct me because I'm sure I'll miss something here. My understanding of passkeys is that they're effectively like the key to my house. With the passkey, as long as you've got it, you get in. Like, my door does not discriminate with who's holding the chunk of metal. Is that right? Is that oversimplified? How is the world changing? Should I care? Is a passkey better than a good password?
So I think that might be oversimplifying the reason why you would, like, why I think passkeys are such a great idea and a great system. So the problem with passwords is always storing them and communicating them. So to go back to the basics, the reason that we use passwords these days, and this didn't always used to be the case, but I think since the 90s, most systems have passwords, is so that a remote system can determine whether you are who you say you are. So I can't just ask Google or someone else for give me Bex's email, because we as a society have agreed that it's usually not a good idea to be able to see someone else's email. Now, previously, we didn't really have much of a choice other than passwords, where basically you come up with a shared secret between you and the other party, like Google, for example. where I basically say, if I whisper the magic phrase, you know that it's me and you give me access to my emails. The problem with that is that Google has to store it and that I have to send that magic phrase. Both of those places are very susceptible to leaks. Now, this is not saying anything about Google. That was just an example. But there are a lot of websites these days that get data leaks. If their data is leaked, that often also includes password databases. And while decent websites these days store passwords as hashed, basically a secure method that is impossible to reverse and really hard to brute force, there's enough cases where people do manage to brute force passwords because people use terrible passwords, for example. So that is the storage side of things, like password database leaks. And the sending side, these days we all have TLS, I hope. I mean, most browsers even warn you if you try to enter a password at a non-HTTPS website. But there's a thing called phishing, where you get an email from, like the other day I got an email from my bank with a, hey, we need you to verify your details. Please click this link and verify and log in. So you click the link and it asks for your password. And a lot of people will be like, well, the email came from my bank. The website looks like my bank. The domain, even if they even check the domain, it may look like their bank because they don't notice that like the L has been replaced by an I.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is really hard to see. And they just enter their password. And now you just send your password to a third party who should not have it. Passkeys basically is a way to solve both of those issues and make the user interface much better at the same time. So passkeys, as a primer to passkeys, it's basically asymmetric keys. So you get it when you sign in or sign up for a website that supports passkeys, your browser or the passkey storage method generates a new private key unique to that website. It sends the corresponding public key over to that website, and that website then only stores the corresponding public key. Because it's a public key, if it gets leaked, there's nothing an attacker can do with it. So that's why it solves the storage leak issue. And if I want to log in to a website with a passkey, basically the website sends me a challenge, which is a random series of bytes or a random text. And my computer will use the private key to sign the challenge. So generate a signature, which it can only do because it has the private key, and sends that over to the website. The website can then validate the signature based on the public key. And because it is signed with my correct private key, they know that I have the private key. And thus they let me in.
So in that sense, though, if you give me that private key, I can imitate you. In the same way that the hunk of metal on my door doesn't care. And in theory, if you just gave me your password, it doesn't care.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the way that they solve the, like, I'm trying to log into a phishing website.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
So the place that stores the private key, it also stores the domain that the private key is corresponding to. And basically, if you send me to a website that's my bank, but with the L replaced with an I, a computer is very good at matching exact strings. Not just a, yeah, it looks about the same. No, as a, there's a character difference. This is not the same. And then my computer just will not even offer the passkey for logging in because it's a different domain. This domain, I have no passkey for it.
Okay, that makes sense. What I think I'm hearing you tell me is that passkeys effectively are anti-phishing and they prevent leaks from the provider side of the equation or the site side of the equation, not my side. If I leak my private keys, that's my mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know from having looked at, like, have I been owned and stuff, that the problem is not that somebody came and took my password manager or my password list or even the one that's taped to my monitor, which does not exist. It's that they, you know, they got a bulk data download from some website that was left open, some unsecured cloud data store or whatever.
So technically both of them are an issue, but a lot of attackers will try to go for the websites because that gives you way more bang for your buck. Like, you get way more accounts for the same or for one attack. Whereas if I go to hack, like if someone would try to break your computer, they'd get the account for a single person.
Right. And I'm not currently, you know, important enough for anybody to want to expend that effort. Let's change scope here for a moment. The way you described, and we do actually plan this show, so I'm going to change the outline on Patrick and see how he does. The way you described passkeys, it felt a lot like SSH keys to me. Except that I know that SSH keys have had this tendency to, I create one and then I give it to lots of people.
Right.
And I guess the other thing that I know about SSH keys that I think is also true is the key does, like when I go to use my key, it doesn't say I gave this key to these seven hosts. It's not one of those seven hosts. It independently says, have you ever used this host before or not? Because it keeps the known hosts file disassociated from those keys.
Right. That is for the keys from the server to you. So the server side keys.
Aha. Okay. So I hadn't remembered and thought about the fact that there's a server side and a client side key. But, like, can you compare pass keys and SSH keys? Because I feel like that's a utility that at least those of us who've had to use SSH, we have.
So on SSH, one of the things to make note of there is that, as you just realized, there are two keys in play. There's the host side key and the client side key. And basically, at a high level for client side keys, so user keys, you could use passkeys. There are actually also implementations for that, because overall, both of them just come down to the server has a public key, your client has a private key. When you try to log in, the server sends you a challenge, you sign the challenge with a private key and send that over. That is the same.
So on the client side, then I feel like what you're telling me here is that I'm effectively using a passkey-like mechanism. I'm just using a different form of cryptography when I'm using SSH.
Yeah, that's close enough. The actual algorithms might be the same depending on certain options, but the way of encoding it and way everything is used is definitely different, yes.
Okay, yeah, so it's the protocol, I'll say, is different. Maybe that's better than the cryptography is different, but
Exactly.
The server I'm attempting to authenticate to is still challenging me, and I am still validating that the private key they have on file the public key they have on file matches the private key that I have access to.
Yeah, exactly. So the way that a server also tells you which keys you can use for both passkeys and SSH keys is that after you send a username, it then sends you a list of key IDs you can use here.
Uh-huh. So my SSH keys file contains a bunch of keys. It sends me the IDs of those keys. And it goes, you better have one of these or you can, you know, go away or have a password or whatever alternative methods we allow.
Exactly.
So I think the next piece here that I wanted to ask you about was, you and I are both universally in agreement that GPGTs are terrible.
Well,
like I don't think there's a lot of debate there, but it sounds like there may be. So this is interesting.
My nuance there is that the keys are not per se terrible, but the problem is that they often are, and the user experience of GPG, primarily GNUPG, is horrible, and even the better ones, very often they'll generate keys that don't work with GNUPG because they use two new crypto and now you have a useless key. So while the keys themselves are not per se terrible, the ecosystem is terrible, in my opinion.
That's completely fair. And I'm thinking about, I think it was Lacora is the name of the website that wrote the big screed against GPG, which I found to be a very seminal and well-thought piece of writing. And I want to be clear, I'm not like maligning Zimmerman or any of the current developers on the system. Like, I get what you're working with. My issue was that GPG keys just are forever lasting. They don't seem to provide a lot of the guarantees people think they provide. And there's better systems for almost everything else. Have you found a need to keep a GPG key in your life? Because mine are all gone.
I have not. I actually realized that I didn't really a few months ago, and I just revoked my last GPG key.
I'm not sure I actually revoked it. I think I just deleted the files and moved along with my life. Although knowing me, honestly, they're probably somewhere in my password manager because I had kept the files there.
Right. So mine, like my private key is still in my password manager, just in case I find a file that I encrypted with it a while ago, which I actually do still do from time to time. But on the key server, I revoked them with a like key no longer used message. So nobody else should be using the key at all anymore.
Yeah, I've got the key saved for the exact same reasons, that I have a feeling I'm going to come across an encrypted file. I'm trying to do better about encrypting things at rest with something that is not GPG. And what I've kind of figured out is there's actually very little reason for me to encrypt things at rest on my own systems. Like I look at things like Restic and similar solutions that have encrypt at rest built into them as an endpoint when you're doing a backup to a remote system.
Right.
So kind of sewing this up, I think there's two open questions from my side. And that is, one, what do you do about, like, we've talked at length about keys and pass keys and eliminating keys. So what do I do about places like a backup or a container that needs access to a password? What is best practice with that when you're not going to go build, you know, a key management infrastructure and staff it with five people to keep it running?
So what I would usually do is try to explicitly go for things that have client-side encryption, so also often called end-to-end encryption, basically built in. So for me, for example, I use a Mac, and Time Machine encrypts its own backups. If you don't use that, there are other ways to encrypt things. Like you said, Restic does that. And on Linux, if you want to store files locally, for example, you could always create a second Lux volume.
Right. I'm thinking about the situation specifically with Restic, because I've got some Linux boxes. I'm ignoring the fact that I don't back up. And to power Restic, you have to unlock its vault. And so that means that if I have an automated script, it has to have the ability to unlock that vault.
So it would depend on what type of system. Many systems have ways to store secrets on them with protections against other processes or other users getting to them. On Mac, for example, you could create a keychain item And in keychain access, you can set a, this process is allowed to get access to this key, and it can just use that automatically. Windows can do something like that also via TPMs, trusted platform modules. On Linux, it's always a bit tricky because there are certain choices made there with, for example, TPMs, which would have been great for this, that make it infeasible. I think GNOME Keyring Manager may offer something like it. Otherwise, you can maybe look at 1Password also for that. But basically, what I try to do with these types of things is don't have the app just store the key in plain text anywhere, but make it reach out to something to get the key when it needs to, which would then perform checks for who has access, and if needed, decrypt the actual key material.
Okay.
Where key could also mean a passphrase.
Okay, that makes sense. Last thing, hardware tokens. I am sitting here looking at 4 YubiKey 4s on my desk, which you politely informed me that I should I could get rid of and not feel bad. And if you happen to work near me, they will appear on a desk one day soon. Is there a place for hardware tokens in my life now that passkeys are here? I've got sharing through either, I happen to be in the Apple ecosystem mostly, or through 1Password. Like, do I have to care about this? Why should I care?
That would partially depend on how much you trust your platforms. So for me personally, I happen to relatively trust my platforms and just use the secret storage mechanisms built into them. As I said, keychain access or passkeys that are integrated with the Apple ecosystem or 1Password. If, however, you don't have a place where you can trust things to keep your keys, or where it's just not available, like Linux, it doesn't have a passkey implementation, then you might want to use a YubiKey with the FIDO2 support as your passkey storage. Because the same protocol that is used for passkeys is, it's pretty much the same one as the FIDO2 stuff in, for example, YubiKeys or Google's Titan security keys.
Okay, that makes sense. So if I'm hearing right, I should switch to passkeys everywhere I can switch to them.
Yep.
I should use a password manager to manage said keys so that I always have access to them, and I can even, if necessary, as sites enable, share them with my partners and family and friends and strangers. And I should consider whether I want to replace the SSH key usage that I have with something that is a less long-lived key, but because I'm managing it through my password manager, I'm probably okay against leaking. And I should continue to feel okay about not using any GPG keys in my life.
Yep, I think that's a decent summary.
So I think I will make you look at one website after this call. It's a GitHub project that uses Tailscale to somehow get passwords out of 1Password, which just sounds fascinating. But since neither of us looked at it, people online will just have to go to peterkeen.com/tailscale-op-proxy if they want to read about it.
I think I did read about that at some point.
Okay. Probably from me. Otherwise, it sounds like we are, in theory, rapidly moving to a place where everybody, because part of Apple's announcement was that they were going to do a third-party access API on passkeys. So it sounds like we're rapidly moving to a place where people will be dragged to passkeys and everybody else will simply understand that they need to call out for authentication. So like a Visual Studio Code will probably get the ability to do this.
Yeah, I think that most of the platform providers have been making it incredibly easy to just use it. People might have also noticed it because it's built into Chrome, like Google Chrome, for example. And it's in Android also for a while now. A lot of the platforms have started suggesting people to use it.
Well, thank you. It was great talking to you. Well, I mean, I talked to you a lot, but it was great talking to you with a microphone. So if our two favorite fans and their dog choose to write, maybe we'll do some more of these and even drag Adam back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that being said, I will talk to you later, sir.